Hello and welcome to this episode of Ways to Change the Workplace with myself, Preena Shah. I love what I do. I'm a global leadership coach, a consultant, a trainer, a keynote speaker, a podcaster. I help you to develop your leaders, your teams, and I help you to optimize your organizational cultures. I'm here to help you find ways to change your workplace. Why? Because we spend more time in our waking day at work than we do with our loved ones. It has to be a good place to be. So in this podcast, you can expect a mix of interviews with amazing thought leaders and then some solo episodes from myself as well. Strap yourselves in.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Ways to Change Your Workplace with myself, Preena Shah. And I'm really, really excited to introduce you today to my friend who I've known for quite a while now, Louise Johnstone Forster. Louise, hello, welcome. How are you, first off?
I'm good, Preena. Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. Louise, I'm going to do a bit of a personal introduction to you rather than your bio and everything, because I feel like I've known you for a while and I've been following your wonderfulness over the years since we met a long time ago. So allow me to introduce you to Louise Johnstone Forster. Louise, I met, years ago at a networking event in Perth by our mutual friend, the wonderful Daryl. And since I met Louise, I just thought, wow, this is someone I need to get to know more. And Louise, I really feel an affinity to you. Louise has studied anthropology. I studied sociology in the UK. You know, UK studied as well. Louise is really interested in the human condition, much like myself. And she goes, she goes over and beyond. So Louise, I know you have a very strong social justice heart and the kind of work that you do is just wonderful, wonderful. And I reached out to Louise just before last Christmas because Louise wrote an article about loneliness in the workplace. And oh my gosh, that really struck a chord with me. And loneliness in the workplace is a thing. So I want to talk to you about that today, Louise. Welcome.
Thanks.
long introduction. Now, Louise, welcome. In your own words, what do you do and why do you do it, first off?
Good question. I love the intro. Thanks, Preena. It's nice to have something a bit broader. What do I do? I think one of the statements I like, it's probably on you know, my bio or my LinkedIn description, which is I just want to make an impact in my community. Yep. So I think that's probably a good starting point because most of the things I end up gravitating towards, you know, hopefully result in that. And it comes from something I came across years ago, and I can't remember the source, but that was that throughout your life, you know, you potentially build a CV or a resume, which is kind of this list of things that you've kind of technically done, and they're a bit, you know, maybe visual and often work related.
Yep.
And then, but at your eulogy, when you die or when you have died, it very rarely crosses over with your CV. So the things that are talked about are very rarely going to be, you know, your qualifications or your work experience or, you know, the conferences you spoke at your eulogy. So I've kind of, since I came across that, I think it was at least 10 years ago, I've kind of thought, well, throughout life, you want to be contributing to your CV if you want to be in the workforce, but think about contributing to your eulogy. She's kind of weird. And I you know, some people get really funny talking about end of life. Of course, I work in the senior space, so I also like, you know, poking the bear by introducing something like that, because people then we can have the conversation about why don't we talk about something that's inevitable. So having an impact on the community, and that has meant that I've worked in community services, really human services, worked with people.
Yeah.
And so in the kind of, I guess, client customer groups, that has been often people with disability, people maybe experiencing mental health challenges, older people who may be vulnerable and might need more support. And in the mental health space, also addiction, those people experiencing addiction and their families, and that's through a board role, a chair role. And then, you know, broader than that, you know, when my daughter was younger, I was on the committee at school, and you know, it's another little way to contribute and you know, do bits of volunteering here and there. So I think, you know, it's about people. And when we come to the workplace, I think my leadership style is very much about people. We're in human services. You know, I've not had too many roles, you know, a little stint in banking in the UK and a little stint running a scuba dive business. Other than that, I know two kind of slightly off-kilter roles. Other than that, they've been very much working with people who work with people. So looking after staff and volunteers and creating an environment where that's healthy and safe is really important to me too. And that's obviously an area, you know, that you're really interested in.
Absolutely beautiful. And Louise, at the moment, what is your role? You're very humble, by the way.
Thanks. I am CEO of Advocare, which is an organisation supporting the rights of older people. And I'm chair of Palmerston Organisation, which is an organisation that supports people through addiction and their families. And the approach to that very much is shifting to addiction being a response to trauma. So it's interesting to see the evolution of that. So it's very much about these days about trauma and mental health. I'm also a mum to a near 18-year-old, which is interesting. And have a good kind of network of friends and other contacts that, you know, get involved in other things in. So a few hats.
Beautiful, beautiful. You're a beautiful human. And so alluding to your last points, you've got a wonderful network of friends and colleagues and all sorts. And today I want to talk to you about the problem, the real life problem about loneliness in the workplace. And I love the article that you wrote pre-Christmas, and I want to really expand upon that. So first off, can we just start with the basics? I want to understand loneliness in the workplace. From your perspective, and I know you've done lots of reading in this as well, how prevalent is loneliness within the workplace? And what are some common signs or manifestations that individuals might be experiencing it?
I might start back when I got interested in loneliness, which is probably 5 or so years ago. So probably, I think maybe 2018. It was when there was a Minister for Loneliness appointed in the UK. So that year, my ears pricked up, and it was late in that year. And over the Christmas break in Australia, we have, you know, that's our summer break. I put the call out on my professional networks on LinkedIn and my, you know, on Facebook at the time, as more social networks. So for me, there's not loads of crossover in those two networks, but on both networks, I put a call out and said, I'm really interested in loneliness. And I'm thinking of doing a podcast. So I had a podcast series, the organization I was working at the time called Chorus. The Chorus Voices was the podcast we had. And I put a call out to say, I'm interested in loneliness. I might do an episode on loneliness.
Yep.
And was blown away by the response. So, you know, over the 3 or 4 weeks, while that was kind of out over the summer here, I had responses from about 20 people. And very proactive, generous responses from people saying, I really want to contribute to this. So it wasn't just passing comments. I suddenly had like a lot of people who really felt passionate about wanting to talk about this. And because I have generally worked in the senior space, although Chorus does still offer support to seniors, people with mental health and disability.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought, hang on a minute, this is bigger than I anticipated.
Yeah.
I have to stop here. So in the end, I spoke to, I think it was 9 people. I got some input from others, but I sat down long form with 9 people. So I ended up, you know, around an hour mark talking to each of these 9 people, which meant I ended up with between 9 and 10 hours of audio, which as a podcast presenter and editor, you'll understand the daunting
It's a lot.
Realization is a lot. So I ended up needing a bit of help. And that's the only podcast I outsourced to get some support with. And we came up with a structure, and it turned into a 3-part series, which was, what is loneliness? Why do we feel lonely? It was the second episode. And the third episode is, what can we do about it? So it was those 3 episodes. And I don't think any of the 9 people fit into the category, if there is such a thing. I hate categories and silos of you know, an older person receiving services, or a person with disability receiving services, or a person with mental health, although I think it's quite prevalent, you know, with all of us, you know, 1 in 3 of us will experience some kind of mental health. So I guess the realization was they were people just like me.
Yeah.
And so some were colleagues in the field, a couple of CEOs. There was a couple of people, you know, that I come across while studying either my MBA or another governance program. And then just people like, I would call it coming out of the woodwork, let's say. But the majority of the people I spoke to were professionals, and they were in that kind of working age. You know, they were between 30s and 50s, the majority, a few outliers. And I learned so much in those 9 or 10 hours. I feel like I learned about myself. There were some real moments of just real heaviness. I didn't, you know, the podcast wasn't generally a long form, deep podcast. I'm not a counsellor. Probably was a little out of my depth. Learned more about vicarious trauma since. So I think, you know, there was an impact on me. Yeah. So it's pretty profound. I talked to people that I think they generally had experienced loneliness in a certain period of their life, a couple of people longer. So one person or two people had chronic illnesses.
Okay.
And that had impacted their life in a, you know, I guess a long form way. There were a couple of people that had, you know, I guess they were geographical moves actually. So, and we know that in Australia, or particularly Western Australia, we have a lot of migrants. So a couple of the people spoke about that move in their life had them experiencing a period of profound loneliness, which they may not experience now or when I interviewed them a few years ago. And that was very much about being uprooted and having to start again and not having, you know, deep connections. And, you know, so both of them actually had small children at the time. So they had moved, and then partners may have had very busy jobs. That was maybe why they moved. The illness was really interesting because one was a long-term illness, one that was very much, you know, Lyme's disease or similar from a bite, so from an incident. And so they would have had jobs whilst all this was happening. So, you know, I think I heard from them about, it's almost like they would go into work, maybe put their work self on or their work hat, but underneath, you know, their life experience, there was profound loneliness. So I think it taught me that never take anything for granted. And, you know, every single person that you see in any, you know, shape or form could be experiencing something that you know nothing about. And I've seen some lovely illustrations. I've got a few favourites on social media. And there's one of, I think she is English, actually, and it's a kind of digital illustrations. There's a picture of a line of people at a bus stop, and it's an English bus stop, and each person, it's got, you know, found out this morning that someone's passed away, didn't get that job. Next person, you know, was really struggling with an eating disorder. And it's basically got all these people just standing at a bus stop, and you could look at them and say, you know, there's just a bunch of people. But every single one has a story. It's giving me goosebumps right now. Every single one has a story, and everyone's addressing something or dealing with something or working with something in their life. Another thing that I, or a statement quote that I kind of like, is that you can feel lonely in a room full of people. And so I guess if we're thinking, shifting to the workplace, which is your question, sorry for the long-winded
answer. No, carry on.
I work in human services, so all the organisations I'm involved with are people supporting people.
Yeah.
So our service is people. It's, as I said before, don't build widgets or make widgets. So I'm people that I work with, and also show up myself, acknowledging that life happens. And, you know, whilst we're at work, relationships start and may finish or may have, you know, bumps in the middle of them. People die. People are born. It's financial situations change, people's health situations change. Yeah. There are so many things that are happening. And so, I think we need to just understand that, and that not making the assumptions, because I probably think I made assumptions before. Doing that series of interviews taught me that these were people that I knew in some shape or form. Some were, you know, didn't know very well. Some I knew a little, I thought I knew a little better. But I came out thinking, wow, you know, be curious and be kind, because, yeah, I know I've experienced all sorts of things that have really impacted me. And there have been lonely times. I think if you're out of the workforce for any reason, for an injury or mm-hmm. having a child or all sorts of other things, that can be very lonely as well. So, yes, this is, I think it can impact in so many ways, and let's not make any assumptions.
There's so many facets there. And when you were reeling off the, you know, various, I mean, this is just a few things that you reeled off. There's so much more. I was thinking, yes, okay. So when I rose up the ranks, you know, in the corporate hierarchy, I really did feel lonely, because then I had to have that separation from my team. But then, you know, working in people and culture, working in HR, I had to have separation from the organization just to remain impartial. And it was quite the lonely ride there. As a multiple migrant, my God, I have, faced loneliness at various levels with the various, you know, cultures that I am involved in. And then, through different life changes and periods of life, experiencing loneliness has been definitely a factor for me. And then the other thing as well, but Prina, you're strong, you can get through this. And those kind of statements as well, you know, especially when you're feeling low and lonely, you say, no. So I want to expand upon that in terms of loneliness and the impact that it really does have on us. So I've been doing some research also, Louise, and you may well have come across Dr. Vivek Murthy's work.
Haven't. You will send me on a rabbit hole. No doubt now, I will look into
you
that.
You are going to love. So he has written a report. So, okay, let's give everybody some context then. So Dr. Vivek Murthy, he was the Surgeon General in America in 2014 and beyond. There's some controversy. When Trump came in, he didn't like him and he sacked him. And then Dr. Vivek Murthy came back. Long story, Google it, go down your rabbit hole. But the things that I have picked up that I really want to talk to here, Louise, and this is exactly your language as well. So his study is so thorough. He talks about the fact that there's an epidemic of loneliness in the United States and globally. And lacking connection can increase the risk of premature death to levels comparable to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. What the hell?
I have heard that, yes.
Whoa. Yep. And then he talks about the fact that our epidemic of loneliness and isolation was long before COVID. This has been going on for a while, and your studies, your work has been pre-COVID as well. So This is not brand new news, you know. Murthy also warns that the physical consequences of poor connection can be devastating, including a 29% increased risk of heart disease, a 32% increased risk of stroke, and a 50% increased risk of developing dementia for older adults. Louise! And then it goes on, and it's similar vein to what you've been saying. It says that, and you can feel lonely even if you have a lot of people around you, as you exactly said, because loneliness is about the quality of your connections. So that's something else as well. And then he goes on, there's so much. But the last thing I will say is loneliness is across all generations, all age groups, all demographics as well. And then he goes on to say that people are spending less time with each other in person than two decades ago. And his report stated that this was most pronounced in young people aged 15 to 24 who had 70% less social interaction with their friends. And, you know, that's thanks to technology, which we're going to talk about shortly as well, you know, the benefits and not so great things about technology. But there's so much there. So Louise, anthropologist Louise, I want to talk to as, you know, sociologist Prina now. So Louise, shit happens in society. You are well aware of this. I am well aware of this. Everyone is well aware of this. Yet, from a workplace perspective, we don't tend to think, okay, well, that's happening outside our door. this is happening inside our house as well from a workplace perspective, right? So I think there's that bridge. We need to bridge that gap there, which is why I'm talking to someone as wonderful as you and learning all about loneliness. And then imagine that's the societal impact that we're talking about externally. What about the impact on employee well-being in terms of the workplace? You know, so if we're talking about the workplace context, productivity, being present as well, all of that is such a huge factor, Louise. So I've just reeled off a load of extra stuff at you and stats and just fascinating and horrible stats.
There's so much there and my brain's going firing, so I'll try and pace it so I don't kind of do a brain jump.
Talk to me. What do you think?
Well, firstly, acknowledging your point about your experience, Prina, and I just want to pick up on that. Thank you for sharing that and acknowledge, even though I talked to lots of people, you know, when you talked about being lonely in the workplace and your reasons, it made me remember that before I became a CEO, someone had said to me, it's a very lonely role, CEO. You don't have any peers in your organization. So, and I would agree, into my third year as a CEO, it's a lonely job and I have been lonely. You don't have colleagues. You have everyone reporting to you and you report to a board. So you're kind of caught in the middle and you have other peer CEOs, but that's, you know, different. Yeah. So acknowledging, you know, that people might assume that, you know, as you said, we're strong, outgoing and we've done successful maybe on the outside women and we have felt lonely and we have times when we feel lonely. So I think it's really important to acknowledge that. The health impacts, yes, I've come across that. So I don't remember Vivek, what's his surname again?
Vivek Murthy.
Vivek Murthy. I didn't remember the name, but I definitely have come across that. And that was picked up in that podcast series and in other, you know, work that I've done. So we are social beings.
Right.
We've only been industrialized and socialized for, you know, a few, you know, hundreds of years, a couple of thousand maybe, but for millions of years, we've been, more on the savannah. And we had to be social animals to survive. And I think some of that we forget. We wonder why we get social anxiety and we get very stressed when relationships are under pressure and we're not feeling accepted or belonging. And that is because it's inbuilt in us, you know, for millions of years that, you know, our ancestors only survived because they're able to cooperate. You only have to kind of lose electricity. We were talking about the heat earlier, but things happen when you realize, hang on a second, we take an awful lot for granted in modern society. When you actually have to fend for yourself, you know, food, water, shelter, heat, you realize that actually you can't do that alone. I was watching Alone, the program, Alone Australia, and these individuals have to survive. It's actually a lot of work to survive. And interestingly, I think I watched the Australia Alone and pretty much every person left the main reason that from leaving. There were a couple of people that were slightly unwell, but I think the majority of the 10, you know, 8 out of 10 left because they were feeling belonging for their people and they just couldn't handle anymore the being alone. It wasn't, you know, so much about survival. The two people that were, you know, the remaining and the Australian one, both, you know, really, you know, pined for people. And some of the comments they made was just, I just miss my people. So for me, I remember just kind of, you know, feeling it viscerally that we are not meant to be alone. No. So we are, you know, driven to collaborate and work with others. And so we feel a real sense of rejection if the group or individuals kind of reject us. And I think that's how it can definitely show up at work. And of course, you know, we're all quite different, although, you know, people do tend to hire the same. You've worked in people and culture and HR, but if we want to, I think, a vibrant and healthy and efficient workforce, we need diversity, which means we're all quite different, which means belonging might, you know, take a little bit more work. But yeah, if we have got people that are in those situations where they're not feeling like they belong and they're feeling like an outsider, it will impact their health. And, you know, during COVID in the aged care sector where I'm, you know, my day job is, saw this quite interestingly where the immediate reaction was infection control. And so we then had, you know, people in aged care facilities who may have been, you know, locked in their room for weeks at a time because there was a serious infection control.
Yeah.
But actually the impact on their health was massive and detrimental because they were socially isolated, already experiencing those sorts of things in a situation like a residential aged care home. But that being then further in lockdown, you know, exacerbated that. And, you know, to put it bluntly, loneliness killed people more than the infection of COVID throughout some of that period. And I think that, you know, really demonstrates to us, you know, the impact of it. There was so much in what you said there. I think, you know, what can we do about it? I think we just need to be really human and kind and acknowledge that, you know, we are multifaceted, and I feel grateful that I work in the human services sector because I don't have, you know, widgets as a KPI goal and, you know, say, well, I don't care about you as a person, just pump out those 500 widgets today. We still have, you know, KPIs and goals, but interestingly, the new legislation around safety and psychosocial health, I think, has been really interesting for us at work. And I've used it a couple of times, you know, with our board and with our funders to say, yes, those KPIs, that KPI there may be a challenge to meet. And I also have obligations, and we all have obligations, to ensure that stress and work expectations and all those psychosocial risk factors are not exacerbated. So we may not reach that KPI if that means putting people under psychosocial risks to get the KPI. So, you know, I think
balance,
absolutely. So I think in the workplace situation is actually helpful. And it's, we're in our first, you know, proper year since December 2023 of that legislation. But it's going to be really interesting to see how employers manage that. You know, I see friends and, you know, others in different sectors like construction, for example.
Yeah.
They've got a long way to go.
100%.
Understand, you know. So, yeah, there's so much in there. But, yeah, being human and remembering what it means to be human, I think, is a place to start.
That's massive. And, you know, in the workplace, we've got around five generations working under the same roof now. And we're also different in terms of our needs, but then we're also similar in terms of our needs as well from that belonging perspective. And the article that you wrote really talked about how we can have reverse mentoring. We can connect with each other in a different way. You talked about breaking down generational barriers in your article, especially you were, you know, aligned to that, given the work that you do, and then fostering strategies for connection as well. So within a workplace perspective, and I know you're all about organizational culture as well, you really have to look at your organizational culture to see whether we are enabling belonging or whether we are excluding, you know, it could be unintentional as well. And then the other thing we haven't talked about is the different cultures that we have within an organization. And some cultures are very connected cultures and some are very individualistic cultures and, you know, everything in between as well. And for people who want to go down another rabbit hole, please, 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 if you want to tap into this aspect, look at Hofstede's cultural dimensions. And that's another tool that you can tap into. It's a free resource for you. And what Hofstede did is he studied cultures across the world long ago. And he's got this tool now where you can type in India and Australia. And it will come out and it will give you a comparison of, well, Australia's individualistic and India is a collective culture. It will talk to you about the feminine and masculinity elements of the culture. It will talk to you about the power dynamics of the culture as well and how they, you know, respond to power as well. So it's fascinating. So if you really want to take belonging and inclusivity within the workplace to the next level, look at it from that wider lens. Because I think, Louise, and I'll be really honest, a lot of diversity, equity, and inclusion measures right now, from what I'm seeing, have the best of intentions, but they're lip service at the moment. We need to delve deeper. We need to open that wider can of worms to look at all of these studies and all of the wonderful research that's out there and then apply it accordingly to our organizational culture. Because like you said, your organization is all about the people. Others are building cogs, whatever. Whatever you're doing, you still need your people. They're still at the heart of your organization. And to make it more human, what that is for you, you need to determine what that is linked to your own organizational culture. Louise, I want to ask you about technology and loneliness, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I've got some opinions.
I was listening to a podcast. I listen to podcasts every chance I get, you know, in the car and walking in the morning. But I was listening to one recently around connection.
Yep.
And around the key components of connection, and which lead to that feeling, hopefully, of belonging. And it's like three-dimensional when it works. And so even though you and I now are using technology, we're in real time. So we're getting feedback from each other verbally and a bit of body language from the, you know, waist up on our kind of post-COVID new way of communicating. But we're able to, you know, respond based on, you know, the response we've seen, and it's, you know, dynamic. So in actual person, it's even more heightened because we actually get energy from each other in the same room, and, you know, we got for that full kind of body experience. And, you know, that the comments, like, or the sayings, like, you know, I could feel the tension, you could cut the air with a knife when you walked in, is evidence that even people that think energy is woo-woo, that it does exist.
Yeah.
And so in person is kind of your most rich form of communication, and then it kind of gets there's probably a spectrum, and I would say things like text messaging when it's not in real time and you have, it's just for words, you've got no tone, you've got nothing else. And even perhaps like comments on a post, you know, a post was done and then 12 hours later there's a comment, another 12 hours later a comment, you know, things like losing context. So I think technology is great, but if we miss or we don't think about the things that are really important in communication and connection, which is, you know, that ability to really engage and respond and feel what's going on, then we could think that we have contact with, you know, 10, 15, 20 people throughout a day, again, feeling lonely with people around us. And this is what younger people are doing. So the research is showing that younger people, under 25 particularly, have a preference for texting than in person. And some of the research findings are because it can be more predictable, they can sit and think about what they write and what they respond, but then they're not getting the chance to adapt and engage in real time and understand what human connection is all about. So I think I love technology. I was looking at things like this, you know, platform we're using, Zoom.
Yep.
More than 10 years ago in education, and we were seen as these kind of crazy techie heads then. And of course, COVID just changed the world, and most people now use something along these lines. But I think they're also dangerous because if we rely on them purely, that's problematic. And at the moment, Advocare, we're having an office refit, so we're all not in that main office. And so we're all a bit hybrid, working from home, working in a shared space in the city a little. But suddenly, you know, that all of those things that you talked about are front of mind for me, and that we have a staff meeting next online. So I'll be bringing this up, which is, you know, we all work differently. We all have different expectations, and we need to have ways to check in with each other because one of my team might be not okay today. And how will we know? And sometimes people might say, oh, I don't want to check in very often, but actually we have a duty of care. Technology is good, bad, and ugly, and all the things in between. It's probably how we use it and thinking more, you know, thoughtfully and deeper about how we use it.
Yeah, because, okay, oh, so much to respond to there. So before we pressed record on this interview, Louise told me, I'm working from elsewhere, and you said, I've been displaced. So even that language is strong. I don't know if you remember.
Yes.
You said, I've been displaced.
I don't remember that word, but yes, because I was trying to work out this environment that I'm in, technologically and physically. And I mean, I'm in someone else's space. So there's that sense of, am I, you know, intruding, which I'm not, but Yeah, there was lots of feelings going on there.
Yeah, yeah, it's huge. And then in relation to technology, it does. It can have beautiful connections. So I want to talk to that first off. So for me and my business, I quit corporate life during the pandemic. And I have to say, yes, thank you so much to technology, because that has really helped me to connect with wonderful people, meet wonderful people. So, you know, things like Zoom, LinkedIn, but there's a knack to it. You've got to, first off, technology is good, but you've got to have those social connection skills. You need to learn how to use your words. You know, first off, you've got to have that. Without that, it's really difficult. So then talking to the youth aspect of things, you know, who prefer things on their phone or, yeah, less in person, that I feel it takes people away from the social cues that you were alluding to. You know, we can read each other's energy 100%. So I completely agree with that as well. So if you can't read those cues, it's going to be even more difficult when you enter a workplace to connect with people. And therefore, you're potentially making your own self lonely as well. So that's a concept there. One of my friends who is also a business owner, she lives in Canada now. And she said that her son, she's so proud of her son. He's got a job in Silicon Valley and just killing it, doing so, so well. However, she had an issue with him in that his whole work is remote. It's all, he can work from home and everything is through tech. And she's saying to him, no, go into the office just one day a week, have that human connection. And his response to her is, nah, mum, I'm good. I don't need it. So interesting in terms of the different generations and the different needs we feel that we have as well. But those social cues and, you know, learning to connect with each other and all that kind of stuff only happens when we are in person and when we learn by trial and error. Oh my gosh. And, you know, I've got good stories and bad stories there as well of young Brina. But we learn. So through those social cues and then technology from an older person's perspective, I really want to talk to as well. And I'm thinking about my mum here, Louise. So she has been socially isolated for a long time, pre-COVID. There's mental health issues. There's different stuff there. Yeah. Living in the UK, my dad passed away a long time ago, so mum is alone in the house. So in our childhood home, she's still there. And I've always been concerned about her. And then pre-COVID, my sister bought her a smartphone, and I thought, what are we going to do here? But my gosh, my mum has just connected with so many people across the world, her old school friends, her old teachers, you know, family members who are in India, who are in Kenya, who are, you know, beyond, in the UK as well, all over the world. And she's just got this richer connection with others. So technology has really helped her in that respect as well. So pros and cons of technology, 100%, absolutely so. And yeah, my mum's example is an interesting one just for my observation purposes. But from a workplace perspective now, like you said, we've got technology at our hands and we need to really look at the systems that we use and whether we are effectively using them. You know, we can't just rely, say, only on Teams for just, you know, everything.
Definitely not, no.
We have to determine what works for us. And I think that conversation is often missing within the workplace. And now, Louise, you've heard of it. Everybody's heard of it in Australia. There are conversations going around, you know, legal conversations about the right to switch off from work.
Yeah.
And that might be legislated soon. So the right to switch off from work from technology. Do I work 9 to 5? Yes, usually most people do. But then your brain, my God, does your brain switch off after 5 o'clock? We've got tech. We've got so much.
So much there, Priya. God, this, we could talk for hours. We're going to struggle to fit it in, I reckon. Can I pick up on a couple of things you said? I was thinking about Darren Griffin, the guy that it was our mutual connection to begin with, in that my first connection with him was virtual. And that's indicative of a number of people that I've probably initially connected with virtually. And then it's turned into an IRL in real life, you know, working professional relationship. And how interesting that is and how much richer that has got. And then I was thinking about your mum and all these people around the world. And that made me think about using technology as a facilitative tool. And there's a group in the south region of Perth or of Metro called Switched On Seniors. And it started with a woman called Sheena Edwards, who as an older, not that old, older person, started using technology and just wanted to share, you know, I guess the hurdle of using the thing, the smartphone or the device and connectivity, you know, working the internet out. And then once that's working, what that offers as a window to other things. And some amazing work that group have done is basically opening up a world, because I mean, you know, our kids of today can't imagine what a world was like pre-internet, you know, everything on demand. But these older people suddenly, you know, might be able to access a whole back catalogue of a musician from the 1930s that, you know, brings joy. And so I think, yes, technology has opened up a world of possibilities as a tool. So that was one thing I wanted to pick up on, and particularly in the our older space. Then you were talking about workplace, and I was thinking, really thinking about what we're trying to achieve with a communication and what was most appropriate. So I get triggered, let's say, I'll be completely honest, I'm triggered when I read an email and I can go, this is not an email, or this shouldn't be an email. This is a conversation.
Yes.
So, you know, the, you know, email or text message, when it's used and it's never going to work, I don't think. So anything that requires a lot of thought or multiple attempts at editing, or it's too long, is probably a flag that it shouldn't be in written form, because it needs that dynamic, you know, response. And if it is in an email, it's because someone thinks, well, it's just quicker to send the email. I'll bet you bottom dollar it'll require 3 weeks of relationship repair, which actually a conversation that took longer than the email at the time will mean that you haven't got 3 weeks or more of repair. So there were a few thoughts that kind of came up while you were talking.
Yeah, fascinating. It's really interesting. Do you have any other thoughts on leadership's role in building connection? From your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so I've been an advocate, coming up for 3 years, and I have realised at the moment, you know, this year, 2024, a lot of my role is being president and role modelling and, you know, connecting. At different times, I think the CEO role has different priorities. It can be internally focused, externally focused. It depends how, you know, where you are with your strategy and change. But you know, every time I'm in the office, which is, you know, hopefully about 3 times a week, I mean, for the day, out and about, don't often work from home, but I will do a walk around, and that probably takes me 10, 15 minutes. Some of it might just be a good morning, and then some it might be a bit longer. Now, that's pretty non-negotiable for me, and it has paid off in dividends. In that, I don't do it for the payoff, but I do it for connection. But by doing that consistently, it sends a whole bunch of messages, and out of that come a whole bunch of other things, which benefit the organisation and those individuals and myself. Yeah. And when it comes to doing social things, you know, some people might think it's frivolous or not a priority, but it's those corridor conversations and those water cooler conversations and the chat over lunch, and we can't dictate what people do in their lunch break, but actually those leaders that will spend time in the lunchroom when they can show to others, hey, I'm human and I have non-work related interests too, and I can bond with you as another person. So all of those opportunities I think are really, really important, and I know that I can frustrate sometimes the layer of people, you know, below, because they look at me and go, like, we should be doing. I think I've probably learned in the last few years, being is as important as doing. And I don't want staff feeling like they need to do for 7.5 hours a day, or sit at their desk, which is presenteeism. You know, turning up and sitting there is not what I want. I would rather someone is actively engaged and they go out for a walk, get some fresh air, look at, you know, some sunlight, you know, get some nature, go on a walking meeting. If we were just in Broome last week, four of us, and 1:30 p.m., I could just tell we were all hot. There were some signs and symptoms, and I'm like, okay, guys, let's just take 45, go back to my rooms in the air conditioning, regroup. Nice. And afterwards, you know, people were thankful. And I said, that's lovely to be thankful. However, I really want us to be able to call that, you know, for ourselves and for each other, because, you know, when you're in Broome, and or you know, Broome sounds like a lovely tourist town, but actually it's The tourism and the reality are quite different. I feel like when you're working in the metro office, it's quite different, and it's hard to imagine what it's like doing a day out on the road or in different conditions. And, you know, being on for 7.5 hours again is not what I want. It's about what does this role require right now, and what do I require right now for health and safety? So, yeah, there's a lot in there as a leader, but my main thing is to role model and, pave the way for what is okay, so that people feel comfortable to do those sorts of things. And I think my favourite thing is when I don't know about stuff and it's the type of stuff that I've sowed seeds on, and I'm like, yes, it's working, because I didn't actually, endorse or do that, but that they were the seeds that I wanted to sow. So when they start to grow, I'm just like, yes.
It's working. Brilliant. And there's easy things that you can do, as you've said. So walk around consistently. It has to be genuine. It can't just be like, okay, tick, I've done it now. But it has to be consistent and genuine. And you work out how you connect with people. We're all different. You have your style, I'll have my style. Yep. Social events from a workplace perspective are really important. I would say also team optimization sessions. So that's taking away yourselves from your everyday business as usual operational work and bringing you up on the balcony to really look at yourselves, I guess, from a strategic perspective, and to have the conversations as a collective unit, as a team, that you don't often get to have. I think that's huge. Water cooler conversations. I bang on about this as well, so I shan't say any more. But I love that. Being versus doing, considering where you're at, leaders, and everybody within the workplace as well. Louise, I could speak to you forever, but I've got one very important question for you.
Okay.
Louise Johnston Foster, if I was to hand you a magic wand, what is one way that you would change the way of the workplace?
Well, this is like, the three wishes, isn't it? You're distilling it down to three or to one. I think I would be radical, and my one wish would be to start again with the workforce, because we are still based on, industrialization, working 9 to 5, 5 days a week. Yes, there's some flexibility and there's some other, hybrid things that we have adjusted, but principally we're still working to the, European industrial revolution factory mindset. It doesn't work, I don't think. And so any one small change that I could suggest is still, a band-aid fix. I think we just need radical, that was great for a couple of hundred years.
Yeah.
But let's do some blue ocean thinking and look at, what do we want to achieve from our workplaces, and let's start again. We'd have to probably create a commune somewhere out. wilderness to do this, but yeah, I think there is so much there's so much that is holding us back that we virtually need to start again.
Yeah, times have changed, and we need leaders like you to question the system. Louise, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brina. I have loved that chat. I don't feel like I've been working for the last hour, so thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure. If you like this episode, check out the show notes and sign up to my newsletter. That will help your workplace to be less shitty. It's full of novel ideas, good food for thought. And if you like this episode, pass it on to at least 2 people who will benefit. That's your good deed done for the day. Also, remember to subscribe to the Ways to Change Your Workplace podcast via your podcast provider. And I will see you in the next episode.